Hi there, I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor Podcast. Today we're covering how sleep impacts our overall health, including healthy skin and graceful aging. I receive many questions about sleep, so I'm so excited to have as my guest today sleep expert Dr. Michael Bruce to answer questions about sleep. But first, here's a question from Amy. Amy says, I notice my skin is worse when I don't get a good night's sleep. Is that just my imagination? Thank you for the question, Amy, and I love getting questions from you all. It's not just your imagination. Sleep definitely impacts our skin. Dr. Bruce talks more about this during the interview, but just to give you a little tip here, when you don't get a good night's sleep, there are hormones that the ones that give you healthy glow can become out of balance. For example, growth hormone is a hormone that's released during a specific phase of deeper sleep. And you need that for healthy skin and skin repair. And if you're not getting a good night's sleep, it may be because your stress hormone cortisol is too high. And high cortisol can trigger skin inflammation. So you may be more prone to breakouts of your skin like eczema and acne because of that inflammatory response. So hormones play a big role. Sleep helps your hormones. Stress management helps that. So I'm so excited to share with you how you can get better sleep. And I know you have more questions, so let's go ahead and dive into today's interview. Today's guest is Dr. Michael Bruce. He is a clinical psychologist and a diplomat of the American Board of Sleep Medicine and a fellow of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. He is the author of The Sleep Doctor's Diet Plan and Beauty Sleep. Dr. Bruce is the sleep expert for WebMD and writes regularly for the Huffington Post, Psychology Today, ShareCare, and the Dr. Oz blog, as well as medical and psychology peer-reviewed journals. You may have seen Dr. Bruce on TV shows such as Dr. Oz, CNN, Oprah, The View, Rachel Ray, Fox and Friends, The Doctors, or The Today Show. In addition to all of that, Dr. Bruce has a private practice in Los Angeles, California. Dr. Bruce today shares some very practical tips to help improve both your quality and quantity of sleep so you can sleep more efficiently and so you can get the right number of hours of sleep. And by the way, he's going to talk about how you know how many hours of sleep you need and to improve the quality of your sleep so you can wake feeling refreshed and rejuvenated. You'll also discover why sleep tips that work for some people may not work for you and how to sleep hack for optimal health. So please enjoy this interview with Dr. Bruce. Michael, it's so great to have you on my show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we're talking about sleep today. Love talking about sleep, one of my favorite things. we're talking about how sleep impacts our health in so many different ways, including our healthy skin and graceful aging. So let's talk about that. What have you been finding?
So it's kind of interesting. And first things first is I want to educate people a little bit about what is sleep, because it's kind of this weird mystery, right? We go into that room in the back of our house, you know, it's dark, it's cool. Hopefully we emerge 6, 7, maybe 8 hours later, feeling refreshed, rejuvenated, ready to go. But there's kind of this weird mystery to what is sleep. So I wanted to break it down just a little bit. So first of all, sleep actually in the brain is defined by two distinct systems. So one is a drive, much like hunger, right? So I'm hungry. I eat something and that hunger dissipates. The same holds true with sleep, right? So sleep, actually the drive for sleep builds throughout the day. And then when we sleep, it dissipates. So this is kind of interesting, not to get super duper technical, but that buildup is due to a buildup of something called adenosine in our systems, which is a cellular byproduct. So when cells eat glucose, something comes out the back end, that's adenosine, builds up in our brain, and that's what makes us sleepy. Oddly enough, if you look at the molecular structure of adenosine and the molecular structure of caffeine, they're literally one molecule off. So this is why when caffeine comes into the system, it fits into that receptor site and it blocks the sleepiness, but it doesn't stop the sleepiness. You see what I'm saying? So caffeine is never a good mask, or it masks your sleepiness. It's never a good substitute for sleep. It only just kind of holds it off. And then when your brain burns through the caffeine, all of that adenosine goes flooding through the door. And that's where that caffeine crash oftentimes comes from. So that's one side of sleep, is the drive. The second side is something called your circadian rhythm, or your internal biological clock. Most people in the US go to bed somewhere between 10 and 11 o'clock. And that's because we are hormonally set to do that. We know that our melatonin starts to rise at that particular time. And that's part of what happens. That's kind of the key that starts the engine for sleep. And there are a lot of other things that go on, but having those two different areas and understanding those is going to be important, because if either one of them is off, that's when we have problems with sleep or sleep disorders, most specifically things like insomnia, right? And so understanding that aspect of it, number one, is very, very important. What we've started to learn now is that sleep deprivation is literally at epidemic levels. And I'm not over-exaggerating. I'm not trying to be dramatic about it. We now know that almost 60% of the U.S. population at any given time will report that they're not getting enough sleep, or that they didn't sleep well more than three nights a week. That's pretty impressive when you think about how many people that could be. I mean, if there's roughly 350 million people, you know, that's a lot. That's a lot of folks. That's 140 million people who are sleep deprived. So what does that mean from a health perspective, from an aging perspective, from a skin perspective, right? It means a lot. So it's kind of interesting. But another thing we want to define is what is sleep deprivation? Because, you know, most of the time people think of sleep deprivation in terms of minutes or hours. Like, I only got 5 hours of sleep or 6 hours of sleep. But there's a second aspect to it, and that's the quality of the sleep that we're getting, right? So it's not just a quantity issue, but it's a quality issue as well. And there are several different things that can actually affect people's overall quality of sleep. And before we're done today, I'm going to give everyone a five-step process to improve the quality of their sleep. So that way people can get sleeping better right now, even before they get an opportunity to come to my Super Duper Sleep Summit and learn even more about sleep. But we're also learning that sleep affects every organ system and every disease state. We know that our immune function lowers the more sleep deprived we are for any reason. Sleep deprivation could be due to crazy schedule, being a new mom. It could be due to caffeine. It could be due to alcohol. It could be due to playing on your iPhone Candy Crush until the wee hours of the morning. You know, whatever. I see you smiling on the Candy Crush one. Is that you?
That's my kids.
No, it's your kids. My kids are all into Clash Royale or something. I think that's what it's called. It's unbelievable. So anyway, there's a lot to it. And there's a lot of things that can actually deprive us of our sleep. And when we look at those levels of sleep deprivation, I mean, if you want to spin the clock forward from an aging perspective quickly, just don't sleep very well. And I promise you, not only will all of your organs age faster, not only will all of your diseases progress faster, but you ain't going to look so hot either. Great research that I came out with in the last 6 months that actually shows, on a little bit more serious note, about cancer. So we've now learned that cancer cells multiply faster the more sleep deprived you are. That in and of itself is earth shaking, right? So when you talk to people who are afflicted with cancer, who are going through things, whether it's anything from a skin cancer to a full on organ state cancer, all of that gets worse with sleep deprivation. And we know, oddly enough, we just recently learned that administration of medication on very particular points of that circadian cycle actually can make the medication more effective. So it's kind of interesting, right? So you're in the hospital and you're getting chemotherapy during daylight hours. It turns out that the chemotherapy would be more effective at night. Because at night you have different stimuli that are going on. You're not having as much information coming in. And your circadian cycle, actually from a hormonal perspective, is more accepting of that type of medication coming through the door. So again, it's pretty amazing some of the stuff that we're learning these days when it comes to sleep.
That's awesome. I love all that information. I love that you're really digging into this research and bringing all this out to us, bringing this awareness and busting myths and getting to the truth about it. And I really like how you talk about quality versus quantity of sleep, because I have patients that say, oh, well, I know I get 8 hours of sleep, but I still feel bad. and then, you know, we have to talk to them about the quality of sleep. So can you talk about that at all?
Sure. Absolutely. So when we think quality, we need to think about the different stages of sleep. So let me define those stages for everybody, so we kind of all know what we're talking about here. So we go from wake to stage one, to stage two, down into stage three, four, back to stage two, and then into REM sleep. That is considered one full cycle. It takes about 90 minutes to do. And you actually have to do that very particular dance in order to get to the stages. I'm not sure why the brain is set up that way, but it is. And so what's interesting is stage one and stage two, which make up almost 55% of your sleep, are light, crappy sleep. That sleep really doesn't do you a tremendous amount of healthful goodness. It helps keep the sleep cycle together, and there are some other reasons why you want to have it. But from a pure health perspective, stage one and stage two really don't do a whole lot for you. It's the stage three, four, which is where all the growth hormone is emitted. That's the true beauty sleep that you and I have spoken about before. That's really where we start to see repair of cells. We start to see wrinkles. We start to see all these other things go away when we get more stage three, four sleep. So the question people always ask me is, well, Michael, do I need that stage one, stage two sleep? Can you just get me the stage three, four, or just get me the REM sleep that I'm looking for? So in my field, we call that sleep hacking, kind of like biohacking. And the answer is, I can teach people how to improve the overall quality of the sleep, but I cannot figure out yet how to selectively say, we're just going to improve stage three, four, or we're just going to improve REM sleep. And believe it or not, there are no medications out there yet that have been able to do something like that either. So there are some natural ways, though, that we can improve these different stages of sleep to improve our overall sleep quality. So I'm going to give everybody a five-step method to be able to go through this. And this is something that I wrote about in my book, The Sleep Doctor's Diet, Lose Weight Through Better Sleep, for folks who've seen that. But I'm going to go into a little bit more detail. So step one is go to bed at the same time, but more importantly, wake up at the same time every day, including weekends. So that's the killer right there, is the including weekends, right? Because what happens is people are getting six and a half hours during the week, and then they say, well, I'm just going to catch up on Saturday morning or on Sunday morning. If you sleep in past 30 minutes past what your normal wake-up time is, so let's say normally you wake up at 6:30 in the morning. If you sleep in past about 7:15, your entire biological clock shifts. That's a problem, and here's why.
So because how much time did you say?
30 minutes off of...
Wow, okay.
I know, it's terrible, right? Because you're thinking, oh my gosh, what am I doing on Saturday mornings? And so here's what happens is you stay up late on Friday, sleep in on Saturday. Stay up late on Saturday, sleep in on Sunday. Guess what your brain wants to do?
Sleep
in on Sunday and sleep in on Monday. Mm-hmm. And we call that Sunday night insomnia. Most people call that Monday morning fog. And that's what's happening, is your whole brain has kind of shifted. So picking a sleep schedule is very, very important. Now, to back up for just a second, most people have no idea what time to go to bed, right? You know, like, when was the last time, Trevor, that somebody told you to go to bed? Were you like 8, right? Like 9 years old, right? So we have to figure out what people's bedtime is. So remember that each cycle is 90 minutes. And remember that there are actually 5 cycles. 5 times 90, 450, 7.5 hours. So if you wake up at 6:30, I want lights out at 11 o'clock, right? So 7.5 hours back from my normal wake up time. Yeah, it'll take me a little bit of time to fall asleep. So I might not get exactly 7.5 hours, but that's okay. Do that for a week. If you do that for a week and you start waking up before your alarm, then you've kind of figured out what your sleep need is. So I did this experiment on myself. It turns out I'm a 6.5 hour sleeper, not a 7.5 or 8 hour sleeper. And here's how I learned it. I was waking up at 6:30. I was going to bed at 11. And when I went to bed at 11, I would fall asleep and I started waking up earlier and earlier. I would go to bed at 11. I'd wake up at 5:30. It would still be dark out. There'd be nothing for me to do. So I said to myself, well, I'd rather have that time in the evenings than that time in the morning. So what I'm going to do is go to bed at midnight and then get up at 6:30. And that's generally speaking what I do. I keep that very, very consistent. So that way I don't get that social jet lag, is what we call it, or that shift that occurs over the weekend. What's also interesting about going to bed and waking up at the same time is your brain knows when to sleep. So sleep is kind of like a baseball game. If you show up at the first pitch of the first inning, you get to see the whole game. But if you show up at the inning three, it doesn't mean that it started at inning three. It still started at inning one, right? And sleep is the same way from a biological clock perspective. So if my brain thinks I'm sleeping, in my case, from midnight to 6:30, and I don't go to bed until two, my brain wanted to go to sleep at 12. And it's not going to catch up on all that sleep in there. It's going to fall into line, and I'm going to miss out on a lot of that physically restorative sleep, because that's the sleep that happens in the first third of the night versus the mentally restorative sleep that happens in the last. So to make it simple, go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time. If you don't know what your bedtime needs to be, take your wake up time, count back 7.5 hours, try that for a week. And if you're waking up before your alarm, you're right in the money. That's where you want to be. So that's step one.
Okay. So I have a couple of questions about that.
Fire
so,
away.
So you want to typically mimic when the sun goes down. I mean, you know, if what you about can. The people that like to get up at 3 a.m? How do you feel about getting up before the sun?
See, this, you're asking the right questions. I love it. So I have a new book coming out called The Power of When, and it's all about something called people's chronotypes. So what you're talking about is there are some people who like to go to bed early and wake up early. We used to call them early birds, right? And then there are people like me who like to go to bed late and stay up late and sleep late, right? Those are more night owls. And so we have to look at those in personal individual shifts. And so sometimes it might be better to go to bed early. So in my instance, if I was an early bird, right? And I was better at going to bed at 11 because that's when I wanted to fall asleep and waking up at 5:30, then I could find something else to do at 5:30. I just know that me, I'm a night owl and I like to stay up later. So that's why I pushed in that direction. So you should look at your own personal preference. And if you don't know exactly what that preference is, I actually have a quiz that you can take on my website. So if you go to www.thepowerofwhenquiz.com, you can take the quiz and figure out what your chronotype is, and then it can tell you when to do all kinds of different things.
Oh, that's great. So, but is there, and I love that, and it makes sense. Everybody's unique. Everybody's a little bit different. So we've got, you know, all different types. But is there a point where, you know, sleeping in the middle of the day is for 7.5 hours every day is still not going to do it? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Is there a certain time of the day where you really should not go to bed or really yes. should not wake up?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're looking at like absolute times, we know melatonin production follows core body temperature rhythm. So when we look at somebody's core body temperature rhythm, the reason that we all sleep better in the cool is because that's actually what our core body temperature is doing. So our core body temperature will hit a peak at around 10:30 at night. And then when it crests and starts to fall, that's actually a signal for the brain to release melatonin. And that's when it's the best time to fall asleep. So the majority of people, the reason that their bedtime is around 10:30 is because that's historically where that melatonin temperature curve has a tendency to hit. And that's why people have a tendency. Usually roughly between 7 and 9 hours later is when you want to wake up, depending on. And if you can, you want to try to avoid napping during the day, unless you only got 5 hours because there was a crying baby or you had to catch a flight or something like that. And then the perfect time to nap, it turns out, is during a second very small core body temperature dip between 1 and 3 in the afternoon. So you've probably experienced this. It's called a siesta, right? and that's where it comes from. It's actually biologically driven. But everybody will feel sleepy between 1 and 3 in the afternoon. But be careful, especially if you have insomnia. You never want to nap if you have insomnia because there's a direct correlation between afternoon napping and having more difficulty sleeping for people with insomnia.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That definitely makes sense. And this is my last question. I want you to keep going, but I just have another question that's brought up is that if you take a bath or a shower to impact your body mm-hmm. temperature, is that going to help us sleep?
Yes, that's a great way to do it. And that's one of my fundamental tricks, if you will, of teaching people. So I'll tell you, it's kind of funny. So it turns out that a bubble bath is the best thing that you can have. And people are like, Michael, you're talking about a bubble bath? I am. And here's why. So Mr. Bubble is like your new Sandman, right? It's your new sleep guys. Because if you put bubbles in the bath, it forms a layer of bubbles across the water, which keeps the heat in the water longer. And keeps your body submerged in hot water longer. So you want your temperature to be about 100, 102 or so degrees with the bubbles. Get in there and get in there neck deep because that will actually fully change your core body temperature and make you hotter. When you get out, your core body temperature then drops. Again, signal for the brain to release melatonin. It takes approximately 90 minutes. So let's say your bedtime is 11. I want you getting in the bubble bath maybe around 9:30, take a nice 20-minute luxurious kickback, Epsom salt, lavender, maybe a few candles, relaxing bubble bath, right? Then hop out, dry off, do the things that you need to do before bed, and it will actually help you fall asleep.
Excellent. Love it. Okay.
So we've got our consistency, right? Step number 2 actually has to do with caffeine. So I'm a big fan of coffee. I have a cup of coffee every day. But what's interesting and what we're learning now is caffeine actually has a half-life of between 8 and 10 hours. So it'll affect you in about 30 to 45 minutes, but it will, or maybe even 20 in some cases, but it'll stay in your system quite a long period of time. And so if you stop drinking caffeine by 2 p.m., it'll actually help you fall asleep because at least half of it will be out of your system by 10, which is kind of what we're looking for in terms of bedtimes. So stop caffeine by 2 p.m.
So half-life means how long it takes for it to get out of your system.
That's how long it takes for half of it to get out of your system. And having half of it still in your system does not appear to have an effect on sleep. So that's why we chose that number. Okay. So step one, stick to one schedule. Step two, stop caffeine by 2 p.m. Step number three has to do with alcohol. So, oh, and by the way, caffeine, not only does it prevent you from falling asleep, which can change your overall sleep quantity, but if it's still on board, it actually keeps you out of the deeper stages of sleep, which is where it affects sleep quality, which is what we're talking about. Step number three has to do with alcohol. So there's a big difference between going to sleep and passing out, okay? Multiple alcoholic beverages lead you to the passing out stage. Now, what's interesting is while alcohol does make you feel sleepy, that also prevents you from getting into the deeper stages of sleep. Also, alcohol is a diuretic, so it makes you pee and makes you more dehydrated. Half of the reason that you have a hangover is from lack of stage 3-4 sleep. The other half is dehydration. So I ask people to stop drinking approximately 3 hours before bed. It takes the average human body approximately 1 hour per alcoholic beverage to digest. So if you have a couple of glasses of wine with dinner, I don't have a problem with that. Stop drinking by, let's say, 8, and then you can go to bed at 10, no problem, after having had 2 glasses of wine. So step number three, stop alcohol approximately 2 to 3 hours before bed. Step number four is exercise. The best way to improve your overall sleep quality is exercise. There's a tremendous amount of data on it. And it's actually daily exercise, if possible, 20 minutes cardiovascular. But it turns out you don't have to like run a marathon. It doesn't have to be super intense exercise. Just getting out and kind of getting the body moving and going, getting a little bit of a sweat going. Not only is it great for hydration because you're going to be drinking water while you're doing it, but it's also really good for sleep. We're not 100% sure why, but we think it has something to do with the endorphins and the enkephalins that come about when you are exercising, that it can actually be helpful for overall sleep quality later on. The issue with exercise, though, is some people kind of get revved up from exercise, whereas other people kind of chill out from exercise. So if you're one of those people that has a tendency to get revved up from exercise, then you're going to want to exercise earlier in the day. So you're going to want to say probably 4 hours before bedtime would be the time you would want to stop exercising. Whereas if exercise mellows you out, you can exercise almost up until an hour or two before lights out. And then taking that hot bath or shower that we were just talking about is a perfect way to, again, coast yourself right into sleep. Last step, step number five, is get sunlight. So it turns out that when sunlight hits the optic nerve and bounces around, it actually stops melatonin production. So most people don't know, but melatonin is called the vampire hormone because it only comes out in darkness. And so as soon as sunlight comes in, it stops it. So if anybody out there ever suffers from morning fog, they tell me, right? So you wake up and you're just like, oh, I feel terrible. I can't, where's my cup of coffee? That kind of thing. Better thing to do when you wake up, first thing, swing your legs over the side of the bed and take 5 to 7 good deep breaths. Number one, we want to get your heart rate going, want to get your respiration going. Stand up and right next to your bed, you should have a glass of room temperature water that you've had like probably overnight, okay? Drink that out of the window to get direct sunlight, or walk outside and get direct sunlight. Please put on a robe if you're going to walk outside. I always have to tell people that because they may not remember it. But that sunlight stops that melatonin production, and sunlight is good for vitamin D production, which we know is actually good for skin. So there's a lot of other reasons why vitamin D would be good. So those are my five simple steps to improve your overall sleep quality. So real quickly, again, keep one schedule, stop caffeine by 2, stop alcohol 3 hours before bed, stop exercise 4 hours if it revs you up, and get 15 minutes of sunlight in the morning.
All right. I love it. Those are fantastic tips and so practical and useful for all of us. So in addition to those, are there things that you would recommend for people's bedroom to make, kind of a sleep friendly bedroom?
Absolutely. So it turns out that your environment has a huge effect on how you sleep. And actually, this is one of the things that we talk about on the summit. We have somebody who's talks about, we have somebody talking about light. We have somebody who's talking about bedroom environments in terms of temperature, in terms of electrical shielding, all these different things. But when I walk into somebody's bedroom, I think of the five senses, and I look to see if anything of those five senses could be preventing sleep. So first one is sight or light. So as we just discussed, light is the number one killer of melatonin, right? And so too much light is gonna do that. So first things first, what are you doing right before bed? Lots and lots of people are on their cell phones or on their tablets and they're watching Netflix or they're checking Facebook or things like that. Turns out that the blue light from 460 nanometers hits very specific cells in your eye, and that's what actually turns the melatonin faucet off. They're called melanopsin cells, and they were discovered about 6 or 7 years ago. I mean, they were already there. No, just nobody knew them that way they were there. And it's pretty interesting. So the proximity of the blue light turns out to be a big deal. So if I'm holding my cell phone in my hand and I'm playing on it, that's about 18 inches versus a television that could be all the way across the room. I'm not a huge fan of sleeping with the TV on at night, but I would tell you that a large percentage of my patients do it. And one of those people who is not my patient, but is my bed partner, is my wife. And she sleeps with the TV on every single night. And it doesn't really bother me. I actually use eye shades. And so it's kind of a nice way to do it. And what's kind of interesting about TV at night is most people actually aren't watching it. They're listening to TV, right? So they kind of keep their eyes closed and they're listening to it. So don't put on your favorite show, because all that's going to do is emotionally get you engrossed in the show and make you want to stay up and, you know, binge watch Game of Thrones, you know, until 4 o'clock in the morning and then wonder why you can't wake up for work, right? We kind of know what's going on there. So sight or light turns out to be a big factor. Sound is another one. It turns out that the more quiet it is in your bedroom, the more acute your hearing becomes. So you want to have a little bit of noise, like a box fan or a little bit of music or even the air conditioning or whatever happens to be going on is actually just fine. But of course, there are noises and sounds that can keep people awake, right? And so the number one that I hear in my office is snoring, right? And so there's actually data to show now that if you sleep next to a snoring bed partner, you lose approximately 1 hour of sleep per night. So I don't know if anybody out there is sleeping next to a snoring bed partner, but that person is preventing you from getting the quality sleep that you need. So what do you do about it? Well, there's the old elbow to the ribs, roll them over technique. And that can actually work once you move gravity out of the equation. So if somebody's lying on the back of their bed, all the anatomy falls to the back of their throat. So by shifting them to the side, the anatomy pulls forward and that opens up the airway a little bit. Any way that people can decongest is going to be helpful, right? So nasal congestion or narrowing that tube that goes from your nostrils through your sinuses and down into your lungs, the more narrow that tube is, the more likely you are to snore. So anything you can do to open that up, whether it's using or it's like a warm mister or even ocean nasal spray, like a saline nasal spray, all of those things can irrigate this area, reduce tissue swelling, and that can be helpful. Believe it or not, losing about 4 to 5% of body weight is a big help. I've got patients where we've reduced by, you know, 15 or 20 decibels just by losing, you know, 8 to 10 pounds. I'm not saying you got to go on this massive diet and lose 40 or 50 pounds, but believe it or not, 8 to 10 pounds can actually have a pretty dramatic effect on snoring. So we did sight, we did sound. Let's talk about touch. So touch has to do with temperature in the room. So keeping the room somewhere between 65 and 75 degrees turns out to be the best kind of core temperature that we're looking for. I used to live in Scottsdale, Arizona, where the heat was 118 a couple weeks ago. So keeping your house cool to 75 degrees would cost me like $1 million a month, which I do not have. So be careful in terms of trying to cool your house too much. If you can go 20 to 25 degrees off the daily high, that's going to probably do the trick for you in terms of temperature. When you're looking for a mattress or a pillow or things like that, that turns out to actually have a pretty big effect. I believe that sleep is a performance activity. And so if you have the right equipment, you're going to perform better. So I'm a runner and I could run a race in flip-flops with cutoffs, a torn t-shirt and a boombox on my arm, but you know, my time's not going to be too good. if I have all of my gear, I'm actually going to perform better. And the same holds true with sleep. And your gear in that sense is going to be pillow, mattress, sheets, duvet, things of that nature. People should be throwing out their pillows about every 12 to 18 months, not years, by the way. So many people keep their pillows for way too long. Remember, your pillow is really there to give support to your head and neck, to keep that alignment so that there's no strain on the neck, which can actually pull you out of deep stages of sleep. Mattresses. So people always ask me, how long should I keep my mattress? You know, I wish there was like one of those turkey timers on the side of the mattress that would pop when you were ready to, you know, like for Thanksgiving, that would just pop and say, okay, time done. But there isn't. And so I tell people that your body will tell you when it's time to get a new mattress. If you get out of bed and you feel any level of stiffness or soreness, and it's not from having a really hard workout a day or two before, your body's trying to tell you that the sleep surface that you're on is not really supportive. And remember, don't mix up support and comfort. Those are actually two very different concepts. Support is really, how do we keep your spine aligned? Whereas comfort is that, ooh, this feels good kind of feeling, right? So you want to have both. And there are different layers within a mattress that can do that depending upon materials and things of that nature. If I had to give a drop dead date, I would say you probably don't want to keep a mattress more than about 8 years.
Okay.
So we did touch smell. So believe it or not, there is a double-blind placebo-controlled study looking at aromatherapy and sleep. And it was done with lavender, and it actually was very helpful. Now, don't get me wrong. You don't just sniff something and pass out, right? Unless it's like ether, right? Or something like that. And so lavender actually is one of the few aromas that have been shown, clinically proven, to help with sleep. But be careful. Do not use candles, okay? Because fire and sleep do not mix, right? So a lot of people will have lavender candles and they'll fall asleep with them still lit, and that presents a fire hazard.
Yeah.
So no. We don't like that. But a diffuser, they make lots of different diffusers now. They even make these really cool rings that go on a light bulb, and you can put the essential oil and drop it on your light bulb and then it heats up. It's really actually quite nice. And so we know that smell can actually be a factor. And then there's taste. So people always ask me all the time, well, Michael, you know, what does taste have to do with sleep? Well, if you eat a really spicy meal about an hour and a half before bed, you ain't going to sleep so well. Not from a perspective of digestion, but also from a perspective of nightmares. So it turns out there's actually direct evidence to link spicy food with nightmares if you're not used to eating spicy food. So if it's part of your heritage and part of your culture to all constantly have spicy food, you're not going to have nightmares. But like, you know, if you go to an Indian restaurant that's got spices that you don't have on a regular basis and they're kind of hot, that could actually give you indigestion, which your brain will translate into a nightmare. So be a little bit careful when you're eating at night.
All right. All right. Love it. All right. Those are fantastic tips and things that we can all use on a day-to-day basis, because sleep is so important for our health. And so I know that you have a summit coming up. Why did you decide to do a sleep summit?
So first of all, this is crazy, right? There's never been a sleep summit before, which is odd to me that that hasn't happened, because it seems like such a fundamental aspect of health. But I'm excited to be the first one to do it. So number one, I wanted to do it just because nobody else had done it before. But more importantly, we have so much research now that I'm letting people know about in the summit. We have 35 speakers, and they're in all kinds of different areas. I've got you, thank you very much again for participating, who's talking all about dermatologic effects of sleep on skin, on all kinds of different skin health, hair, all those different aspects, which are critically important. I've got people who are talking about thyroid health and sleep, adrenal health and sleep. I've got people who are talking about, this was really interesting, grief. So if you lose somebody, how does that affect your sleep? I've got people talking about emotional trauma and sleep. I got Arianna Huffington actually did a lecture for us. So people may know her out there. She has a website called The Huffington Post, a new book called The Sleep Revolution. And she was very sweet to come on board and tell us all about what's going on with sleep. I've actually got a NASA sleep specialist. So this is a guy who actually takes care of the astronauts' sleep while they're in the space station. He came and gave a lecture, which was really kind of fascinating and cool. I've got a couple of pediatricians. I've got one doctor who specializes in infants and their sleep and how to get infants to get into their crib, not in mom and dad's bed, and get them a good night's rest. And I have another pediatrician who talks about children's sleep problems. So getting kids to go to bed, getting kids to stay in bed, you know, one more glass of water, mommy, you know, that's got to stop. It's driving everybody nuts type of stuff. So we've got those people in there. We've got alternative medicine people. We've got Chinese medicine. We've got meditation and sleep. We've got even some more kind of far reaching stuff, like people, if they're interested in things like grounding and earthing and how electromagnetic forces can have an effect on sleep. Honestly, it's like unbelievable how many people we've got talking about sleep.
How many speakers do you have?
We've got 35 speakers, believe it or not, which is kind of this gargantuan number. I wasn't sure I was going to get 35 speakers at first. And then all of a sudden, they all just were like, oh, this sounds cool. Let's talk about it. We have 35 speakers, and it's over the course of 8 days. The last day is kind of a final roundup. So 7 days of new material, 8 days of all the stuff that you could check out before. And we've got some actually really great gifts for people just for registering. So I actually have a sleep quality improvement app. It usually retails for about $14.99 in the App Store, and we're giving it free to every single person that registers. And you just download it right there. And it's got a ton of video, and I teach people, again, how to choose your bedtime. I do an entire bedroom makeover. So I spend 2 full days of the app, if you will, or lectures, talking through every single thing you should think about. I teach people how to buy mattresses, how to buy pillows, all that kind of fun stuff. And that's completely free. There's no obligation. Just register for the summit and you get one.
Excellent. So obviously you've covered a lot today, but there's going to be even more in your summit. So
scratching the surface today.
So people can take what they're learning today and start using it. And then when the summit comes along, then you can go even deeper into learning about different aspects of sleep, and people can watch the parts that they want, are most interested in. They don't have to watch the whole thing. They can just kind of watch the parts they're interested in. They can also purchase the entire summit if they are not available during the summit time, right? Perfect.
Absolutely.
And then you, after this, you're just so busy. I can't believe it. After this, you have a book too.
I do. Yes. So about a month after the summit, my new book is coming out called The Power of When, and it's all about chronotypes. And so, you know, most self-help books tell you what to do, or they tell you how to do it. They don't tell you when to do it. So that's why we call it The Power of When. And so it turns out that everybody has an internal chrono rhythm. You've probably heard of them, like early birds or night owls. We were talking about it a little bit at the beginning of our interaction here. Turns out there's actually 4 different types. There's not just early birds and night owls. There's people that are in the middle, and then people with insomnia. And so if people want to learn what their chronotype is, they can take my quiz at www.thepowerofwhenquiz.com. And when you take the quiz, you figure out which one of your chronotypes you are. And then what I did was, once I know your chronotype, I know what rhythm your hormones are working on, and I match that with what hormones you need with any particular activity during the day. So I actually figured out what the best time of day is to have sex, run a mile, eat a cheeseburger, ask your boss for a raise, take your medication, get a mammogram, talk to your kids. We have 50 different activities in there. Based on your hormones, when are you going to be at peak performance? And the cool thing is once you know your chronotype, you just go to that section of the book and you say, when do I want to talk to my kids? That's my best time. I'm going to, you know, schedule it for then. So it's super easy. It's very straightforward. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. I love it. So yes, you've been very busy and continue to be busy and got a lot of great tools for people. I really appreciate everything you're doing, because I think that we all know that sleep is important, but it is something that we all have to do. We all need it, but it's not always easy. And I think as we get older, it gets harder, and we've got more on our minds and hormones changing and all of that. So we need all these little tricks some more. I've always been a great sleeper. And
that's awesome.
After turning 40, though, I started to notice, like, it's not quite as simple as it used to be. Just lay down in bed and fall asleep. So, you know, I've incorporated some of the tips that I've learned from you, and it's really been helping me with my sleep. So it's fantastic.
Oh, awesome. That's good to hear. Well, yeah. And it is hard, you know, and that's the thing, is people need to remember that they didn't fail at sleep. there's a lot of things that people can do. Sometimes we get a little misguided and we do a couple things that we shouldn't do, but I promise you 99% of sleep is fixable. Thank you for having me today. This has been a lot of fun. We knew we'd have a lot to talk about because we always do. I'm just really grateful that, you know, your whole group is interested in sleep and, if people get a chance, check out the summit.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks so much, Michael.
All right. Thank you, Trevor. Take care.
Okay. I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Dr. Michael Bruce. To learn more about Dr. Bruce and his online summit, you can visit my website, thespadoctor.com. Go to the podcast page with his interview, and you'll find all the information and links there. Also, I invite you to join the Spa Doctor community on my website or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. If you haven't done so already, I highly recommend you get your own customized skin profile at theskinquiz.com. It's free based upon your answers to just a few questions. You'll get your own customized skin report with some great tips. It's theskinquiz.com. Also, don't miss out on the latest tips for glowing healthy skin from the inside and outside. Be sure to follow me on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, and Twitter and join the conversation. Thank you, and I'll see you next time.